the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, where we discuss all things crypto related. Your host, Kieran Ryan.
Last month, institutions plowed $1.2 billion into Bitcoin in just 7 days, and the market didn't even blink. Now, that kind of spending a few years ago would have stopped the market in its tracks, but not anymore. Strategy, that's the NASDAQ-listed company. They spent $1 billion on crypto last month, funded through the issue of preferred stock, and it now owns more than 800,000 Bitcoin. It'll probably bump this up to about a million by the end of the year. Think about that. One company will own just short of 5% of all Bitcoin that will ever be issued. Deutsche Börse acquired 1.5% stake in crypto exchange Kraken for $200 million, valuing Kraken at $13.3 billion. Kraken is developing white-label crypto trading solutions for banks and institutions, which are starting to see which way the wind is blowing in terms of the crypto market. The more important question is whether South African institutions will start thinking the same way. With the Rand's track record and Africa's position as the fastest growing crypto market on the planet, the case is sitting right there. It just needs somebody to make it. Joining us to discuss this is Leon Kowalski, CEO of Cape Crypto. Hi, Leon. As always, very good to talk to you. Thanks for your time. Before we get into some of the crazy deals that are happening in the market, I want to ask you for your overall impressions of the draft exchange control regulations. I know you did put up a very fiery blog on your website, and I just wanted to share that some of that with you. Is it a good or a bad thing?
Hey, Kieran. Good to chat to you again, too. Well, yeah, I don't think it's a good thing at all. Actually, I'm actually drastically opposed to it in my personal capacity. I think exchange control regulations are a legacy of the past and they should be disbanded entirely. For me personally, I think philosophically that it's just a band-aid. It's symptomatic of a deeper issue. And the reason why people are forcing it and why policies have driven it is because there's a very low investor confidence in South Africa. You know, having to force or having to retain capital control to prevent capital flight is symptomatic of the fact that people don't want to spend their money here. They want to spend it elsewhere. They feel safer of it elsewhere. This is symptomatic to me. If, you know, money flows where the most value is, it's like water, it finds its level. And we need to have a private industry, a private economy where money will flow to us out of merit. We must attract investors. And I think exchange control is symptomatic of the money leaving instead of it coming in. We wouldn't need exchange control if we had a very thriving economy. And I think we're focusing on the wrong thing. So that's symptomatic to me instead of dealing with the root cause, which is not a very hospitable environment for investors at the moment.
Right. And of course, for crypto, you know, crypto holders and Bitcoin holders in particular, they will be forced to put their crypto onto a licensed exchange. So the idea of peer-to-peer transfers, you want to send something direct to your mom overseas, that would be a thing of the past if these regulations pass as they are.
That's right. Yeah. Crypto especially, it includes other assets, gold, other property. The issue as well is they haven't put in these draft regulations, they haven't actually specified a minimum amount. So they have declared in these regulations that it will be illegal to transact peer-to-peer, to transact anyway outside of one of these authorized CASPs above a certain amount. They haven't put that amount in there, so we don't know who this applies to. It could apply to everybody. They could put that minimum amount at zero. They could put it at a million. We don't know. So it's very hard to comment on some regulations that we don't know who it's going to affect. It also then bestows this minister, whoever the minister is, just wide powers, you know, free reign to basically set this minimum whenever they see fit and change it whenever they see fit. This should go through parliament. It shouldn't just be tacked onto existing legislation, which is what they're trying to do. It should roll through parliament. It should go through public debates. It's wide ranging.
Do you think this might open the door to a discussion about exchange controls in their entirety? This act is the Currency and Exchange Act is nearly 100 years old. And I guess people are saying, well, if it was there to protect capital and protect the value of the rand, it's been an abysmal failure. The rand has lost 99% of its value since 1961. Maybe it's time to have a discussion about this. Would you agree with that viewpoint?
100%. I think it's high tide. We should. You can look at all the companies, countries around the world that had exchange control and then dismantled it. Most of them dismantled exchange controls in the 90s. A lot of them implemented it after World War II to try and stabilize the economy, just to help keep money in so that people could rebuild and rebuild their countries. But they then disbanded it. And it's better to have a free market globally, because then money flows where the right worth is. You know, capital is deployed where it yields the biggest reward. Singapore, for example, they disbanded their exchange control regulations, and they've got something like the highest income per capita now, the highest wealth per capita in Singapore, with no exchange control regulations. And they're a financial hub of the world. So we could become a financial hub. We could be that. Even for Africa, we could be the financial hub of Africa, if not the world. So I feel it's high tide to get rid of these things. We should sit down and look at it and get rid of it.
Yeah. Do you think that there's a kind of a knee-jerk reaction? The government feels it's got to be intervening everywhere. And this is just another example of that. And really, without looking at cases like you've mentioned, Singapore, and there are many others around the world which have done away with this, or certainly relaxed them very, very significantly. Do you think that this is kind of protecting a bureaucracy rather than the country?
Personally, I do. In my personal opinion, you know, I mean, dealing in crypto and Bitcoin, we're naturally philosophical and naturally politically inclined. And so from my point of view, yes, it is. It is protecting bureaucracy on twofold, because one, it allows failed policies to continue to work. And then it allows the state to then get loans from the IMF, from the UN. And these huge loans that we're never going to pay back, billions and billions of dollars of loans, we're never going to pay them back. And it gives the government the space to deploy capital how they see fit, rather than private enterprise. That's one side. And then the second side is that it forces you, if you do use exchange control, if you do want to send funds out of the country as an institution or a private citizen, you're forced to use the banks. You're forced to use it and pay exorbitant fees, you know, upwards sometimes to 13%. It's extreme. And it's monopolized the flow of funds rather than stabilize the economy. As you pointed out rightfully, the Rand has lost, you know, 95% of its purchasing power in 100 years. This is not acceptable. Yeah.
Since 1961, when the Rand came in, before that it was the pound, shillings and pence. It has actually lost 99% since then, believe it or not.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's look at some of the deals that are happening in crypto. So I mentioned the $1.2 billion being bought in 7 days, and the market barely moved. You go back, you know, 5 or 6 years, you put that kind of money into Bitcoin, it would have thrown the price all over the place. What's going on here? This is not the same as it was a few years ago.
Yeah, it's just a very large indicator of institutional. It's the institutional adoption, institutional buying, institutional selling. And what's actually going on behind the scenes is it's OTC, over-the-counter trades. And you've got companies like Strategy who have declared their intent to purchase vast amounts of Bitcoin. You've got BlackRock buying Bitcoin for the ETFs. They've declared the strategy. And so you have big market making companies who run OTC desks. OTC, in case you don't know, is just buying off exchange. So instead of going to Cape Crypto, going to Kraken, Luno, Vala, and placing an order on the exchange itself, you call up your broker on the phone, you say, I need to get some Bitcoin. And the whole transaction happens off exchange. This is done to prevent slippage because there's limited liquidity on the exchange. You know, you can look at an exchange at any given time and see a few Bitcoin for sale, maybe 10 million, maybe 100 million. But if Strategy wants to roll in and buy 100 billion or 10 billion, you know, it's the exchange can't absorb that. So they buy from OTC desks, and these OTC desks then control the market because they can set the price. It all happens off exchange and the price doesn't move. They're basically selling their own books, their own supply, and gradually bleed that into the exchanges so that there's very low supply shock and price shock.
And Cape Crypto, I mean, you are one of the smaller exchanges in South Africa. You have been going for quite a while. Give us an idea how the market is. Do you run an OTC desk? If a client phones up and says, I want to get 100 or 1,000 Bitcoin, could you fulfill that?
We do. We have run an OTC desk a lot more prominently before. These days, we only do it for our very VIP clients that we know and people that reach out to us individually. The reason being that there has historically been quite a bit of fraud. You get a lot of dangerous actors in the space. There can be money laundering risk with OTC. So we shy away from that. We prefer to keep our noses pretty clean. But for very, very well vetted clients, we do offer that service. Yeah. And we do put a lot of volume through that. And that's in the millions, which doesn't show on the exchange. Valid does it as well. I believe Luno does it too. OVX is the big OTC player historically in SA too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, South African institutions are nibbling. You can see them. They all have their crypto teams at work or their stablecoin teams. But it is the stablecoin space where they are looking most seriously. And that's because payments and stablecoins change the whole payment landscape and architecture quite a bit. So yeah. This is the future. SWIFT, the banking messaging service that allows interbank transfers globally, they're already seriously looking at this. My question for you is, are South African institutions falling behind in their adoption of crypto? We got it on the stable coins. They see the costs are going to be much, much lower than they are for normal SWIFT-based transactions. But are they falling behind?
I think so. I think they are. If you look, you pointed out Deutsche Börse in your opening there. And that what they do is they actually run massive infrastructure across Europe and the US, which is the infrastructure behind all the institutions. It's behind Vanguard. It's behind BlackRock, UBS, you know, many, JP Morgan. And that infrastructure actually is what these institutions use to do their clearance, to do their FX movements. And the fact that they're adding crypto as one as an offering in their portfolio essentially means that they're here to stay. Like institutions are in. And that with that coming in, it means all those European institutions immediately have access to these new rails, immediately. And new vehicles and new instruments. And they have that and they're flying with that. South Africa, we're battling with exchange control regulations, you know, some legacy thing from apartheid. And we are falling behind. I know RMB is looking at payments through stablecoins, but they're also looking at SWIFT. SWIFT 2.0 runs on a stablecoin network. It runs on its own private blockchain. And so if the banks already have this infrastructure globally with SWIFT, it's just so easy to turn on instant settlement instead of going through a third party or some other company that offers it as a service. So I don't think South Africa is going to actually switch over to the more DeFi approach, the more crypto-centric approach. I feel like the banks and the institutions here will leverage existing partnerships like SWIFT, like Visa, and they will use those rails. That seems to be the direction to me. Unfortunately, I prefer it to be more decentralized and more direct. But with all the compliance and the regulations, it's near impossible to do it. And the exchange controls is testament to that.
Yeah, it does raise questions about, you know, the institutional capture of the crypto space. What started off as a financial revolution of sorts, we see with regulations coming in and big money from the institutions as well, that the idea of financial freedom seems to be evaporating. Where do you see this ending up?
Yeah, it's quite sad on one side, but on the other hand, it's actually playing out how it should. I think there's basically two angles to it, and it depends how you want to quantify Bitcoin. And you know, there's Bitcoin, the concept like Bitcoin is freedom money, where we can hold our own money, we can be our own banks, we have cold wallets, we've got self-custody, we can transact with each other whenever we want globally, no one needs to know about it, there's privacy. That's sort of the genesis and the roots of this thing. And then we've got more of a modern day playout, which we see the institutions taking, where Bitcoin is like gold. It's an asset. They want to hold it. You want to invest in it. It's a reserve asset. It's traded by hedge funds. It's treated like digital gold. And so these two are sort of playing out in real time together. The institution narrative is definitely taking over. Like we can see that. That is one side. But then again, does it really matter? Because you've got massive institutions that hold gold. You've got governments around the world that hold gold, and gold still trades. You can still use it in a certain way. Bitcoin is freedom money. The governments around the world can't technically stop you from trading. They can't. They can outlaw it and ban it. They can make it illegal, but they can't prevent the trade. Now, I'm not advocating for either side of that, but it's a good experiment in freedom. And I always think about America's Second Amendment, right? The right to bear arms and defend themselves with arms and defend against tyranny. I think if they were writing the Constitution today, Bitcoin would be part of that Second Amendment, the right to own your own money, the right to own freedom. Like money is freedom. We shouldn't be asking the state for permission of how to spend our money. So right. It's okay. Still early days to see how it plays out.
Yeah. Let's talk for a minute about strategy. That's Michael Saylor's company. Michael Saylor, the big evangelist for Bitcoin. Strategy's now got 818,000 Bitcoin. I just checked it. And it'll probably go to about a million by the end of this year. So, you know, whether the market is tearing away or it's in the slumps as it is at the moment, Michael Saylor is buying. And he's created instruments there where institutions who may not like to own Bitcoin directly, but they're quite happy to own preference shares, which have got a yield, they'll pile into that. But astonishingly, it will mean that, you know, 5% of all Bitcoin, there's only going to be 21 million in issue, is going to be owned by one company. And then you've got other corporates coming in behind that, you know, also building up fairly sizable portfolios in Bitcoin. How's this going to play out in this, talking about independence, financial independence and freedom, when you've got institutions holding so much of this wealth?
Well, I see it playing out exactly as it does right now, where we've got, you know, in a purely capitalist environment, communism is a bit different, but in our somewhat capitalist world, money gets deployed. So that, you know, that capital will be deployed in some other means. It's not just hoarding money under the mattress. You know, that is deployed back into infrastructure, back into other businesses. It's deployed. So, you know, whatever the worth of that Bitcoin is, it will be deployed. And if they just do decide to hoard it for whatever reason, then the Bitcoin that is in circulation will continue to circulate and be spent in the same way. So it doesn't really impact it. But if we do ever get to a Bitcoin as the standard, as the default, yeah, then they'll have a lot of spending power and they'll just be a very powerful bank. They'll be investing around the world. You can look at companies like Tesla and Elon Musk companies. They've got huge amounts of value that have been deployed, you know, billions and billions of dollars. That's the same thing. Becomes the same thing. Deployable capital. Because all Bitcoin is at its genesis is energy, right? It's captured energy.
It's captured energy, yeah. I think the comparisons there with Apple and Tesla are fairly legitimate because if Bitcoin does become the standard, you know, Strategy will be wealthier than probably most countries in the world on its own. But then again, you look at the market cap of companies like Apple and Tesla, they're already bigger than most GDPs around the world. So this is not unfamiliar territory, I would imagine. Tell us about Cape Crypto. A lot of our listeners may not be that familiar with you. Who is your market? Give us a little bit of the demographics of that. Is it the crypto enthusiasts? Is it based in the Cape? Is it all over the place? Well, what do your customers look like?
Yeah. Well, we started in November 2020, on the 5th of November, Guy Fawkes Day. And yeah, we were basically born out to be South African focused, to try and get all South Africans to hold Bitcoin, to get people to try and invest into Bitcoin back then. And we were largely focusing on the underbanked. We had voucher on-ramps, different sort of on-ramps that no other exchanges had at the time. We've got Bitcoin Lightning, which is Bitcoin's payment rails, essentially, super low cost and instant. We offer that. And so our target customer was largely for that. It's for the underbanked, low fees. We charge the lowest fees in the country, actually, with a view to get people to onboard, to get onto crypto. Now we've expanded as time's gone by. And after the last 5 years, a few more bloody noses and bruises than I would have liked. But we're now at a place where we've got institutions coming on board. We've got wealth management, which is targeted towards financial advisors. We've got collateralized loans. We've got payment rails behind the scenes for merchants to use. And that's built for bank integration. Similar to this relationship between Deutsche Börse and Kraken, we have a similar rail system. We're trying to build a similar space where institutions can plug into our rails and use us behind the scenes. And so, yeah, so our customers are quite broad at the moment. We've got quite a few cohorts, but the root and the genesis and the love of it has always been for the average everyday South African to buy Bitcoin and get on it.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the criticisms of these new, going back to the exchange control regulations, which were published recently for comment, and they are getting a lot of comment, I can tell you that, is that, you know, exchanges will benefit. There are certain parties who love these regulations or should love them. For example, the advisors, the accountants, the lawyers, the auditors, and the exchanges, because they would be forced, you would be forced, if you're holding Bitcoin on a hardware wallet or a software wallet, to actually put it onto an exchange. Now, you as an exchange have an entirely different view on that. Why?
Well, I don't think money should be directed by regulation. It's a fundamental philosophy difference. I think that money should flow where the people want it to flow. And if that means private trade and private settlement, just like cash, if you want to go and buy something cash from the local cafe on the corner, you should be able to do that. We shouldn't have to have government permission for that. It's the equivalent of saying, well, if you want to spend cash, you need to do it with government permission via a centralized entity. It's essentially removing the concept of Bitcoin as cash. So I have a problem with that. From a business point of view, sure, it's great. We're well positioned for that. And of course, we're fully licensed and compliant. But that's a separate discussion for me. You know, this is philosophical where I don't think we should be trading this path. It's just centralizing control with something that should not be centralized.
Okay. Leon Kowalski.
Yeah.
Cape Crypto. We're going to leave it there. Thanks very much for your time, Leon, and for giving us your thoughts. You know, what it's like to operate on a small exchange and also these new regulations. I think that is going to be a big point of discussion that we'll probably have to pick up again in a month or two. So thank you for your time.
Pleasure, Kieran. Thanks for chatting.
Thanks for listening to the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, hosted by Kieran Ryan. To listen to our other podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za or the MoneyWeb app and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates.